scary. We're in season 8.
This is crazy, Steph. Welcome back to My Bloody Horrorcast, that podcast that keeps you on your toes because you never know we're actually going to release an episode, do you?
I keep thinking maybe it's over and then it's not, just like our friendship keeps going too all these years.
That's right. That's right. The friendship's always been fairly strong. The podcast right. Somewhat back and forth. But here we are.
And it's the only episode that we've done every single season since one season only had one episode, and that is our annual horror Oscars.
Yes, yes. This is our favorite episode, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's mine.
Oh, for sure.
This year was some great stuff this year when I was looking back at everything.
But can we start off with some recently watched?
Let's do it. All right, do you want to start out with the recently watched stuff?
Yeah, so last week I screened the movie The Spider Labyrinth from 1988 at Flickr. It's like a very late 80s giallo, but it is so good. This guy clearly loves Argento. Mm. And the ending is stop motion, the thing bonkers. So highly recommend it. It's a great payoff. And it's set in Budapest, which I think is cool because I got to visit there a few years ago and it is beautiful.
Nice. Okay. All right. Well, one of the ones I watched, I missed this in color in the theaters, but I got to see the black and white version. This is Godzilla Minus One.
Yes!
Minus color. And I was blown away. I absolutely loved it. It's very rare that you'll hear me talk about a Godzilla movie and talk about how engrossing the plot was, or
how emotionally invested you are.
Right. How solid the acting was. Just what an all around fantastic film. The action scenes, the monster scenes are devastating. They're really well done. There's a lot at stake as opposed to a lot of the movies where the humans are sort of just general fodder. And those are fun too. But in this one, you're really rooting for the heroes. You really want them to do well. You really want them to make it.
It has everything you could want in a Godzilla movie because there's no shortage of chomping and smashing either.
No, that boat scene, as we talked about, mm-hmm. is just phenomenal. The suspense, everything kinds. Yeah, oh yeah. Without going into it too much or ruining it, there's three or four just brilliant set pieces in. So yeah, I was all about it. Saw the theater. It's a movie you really should see on the biggest screen possible when you do see it.
For sure. Well, going back a ways, I watched The Dentist 2 from 1998. So The First Dentist is a movie where I've had nightmares. I had this nightmare that I was high on laughing gas and the dentist was just grinding my molars down into a bloody powder. And I was like, you know, no interest in the second movie, but it's excellent. It's a great sequel. It's gross. It's funny. Clint Howard has a bit part. Brooke, the ex-wife, is back. It's just more kooky than The First Dentist. So I would still recommend it, even if you are haunted by the first.
Okay. Is Corbin Burnson back in it?
Yeah. Is he the dentist?
I think so.
Yeah.
I believe so. Yes. Okay. All right. Yeah. So I saw the first new John Woo movie that I hadn't seen in a long time. That was the movie Silent Night.
Oh.
So the main character never speaks. That's kind of the conceit of the film. It's Joel Kinnaman. And again, it's Woo. He's back. It's a Christmas-themed movie that I only saw recently, within the last probably month and a half or so. It's close to Christmas. It's fair. Kid Cudi's in it. And you know, he and Kinnaman are really good, considering Kinnaman, again, doesn't say anything the whole movie. But the movie itself is okay. It's all right. It's not bad. There's some good John Woo action scenes, but man, it takes a long time to get to the action, to get to the good stuff. And I think with
Woo, how long is it?
It's about an hour and a half, but it takes a while. And I feel like with a Woo film, I wanted a little bit more earlier on in the film. But there's some, at the end, there's some pretty good set pieces, pretty good action film. It's not really horror, but it's John Woo, so.
I'm down. I've got to brush up on some John Woo.
Yeah. So not bad. I don't know if I can say like, oh, run out and see it, but it's an interesting concept, you know?
Yeah, cool. I've actually had time to watch a lot of things lately. Usually neither of us have time to watch as much as we want to, but the past couple weeks I've just been crushing movie after movie, and the last one I watched was Spontaneous from 2020. Did you hear about that when it came out? It's a high school and the teenagers just start exploding.
No, I don't think I did hear about that.
So I borrowed this movie from my public library, and I was like, you know, I've had a pretty intense day. I think I would just like to watch teenage blood and body parts just splattering all over the place. And I did not realize, Carrie, perhaps you would think of this, that it's kind of a stand-in for school shootings, and it's actually a pretty moving and effective movie. Yeah, I was, like, not prepared. I was, like, ready to, like, chill out and laugh the whole time. And there are a lot of funny parts. Like, the violence is hilarious, but it's also pretty heavy. I cried.
Interesting. Okay, so Brian Duffield wrote the screenplay for this one.
Why does he sound familiar? I don't think I know him.
And he directed it as well. So he was the writer for the Babysitter movies also.
Oh!
He created the characters for that, and he wrote Underwater.
I'm surprised about Underwater, but the Babysitter makes a lot of sense because it's quippy.
It is, it is. I really like his stuff. In fact, he did a movie that came out this year that was one of my favorites of this year as well. I'll discuss in a little bit.
Oh, okay. Last thing about Spontaneous. I think I put this off for a bit because the poster art is egregious. And I don't think anyone should judge it by that. Truly, don't judge it by its cover situation. Just go right into it.
That one right there. Okay, there we go. An explosive love story. All right. Well, should we get to the main course here?
Yes. All right.
All right. So the horror Oscars, the My Bloody Horror Cast 2024 winners list. All right.
Okay. So we're starting out with costume / set design.
Yeah.
I feel like we usually mash them together.
Yep.
And I'm going with Poor Things. This is the only movie that's nominated in the real Oscars that I'm nominating in our Oscars. And the designers, I had to look them up, James Price and Shona Heath, they have made these costumes and settings that resemble pieces of the Victorian era, but it's very, very surreal. Like, every version of these European cities they go to, they're built on sound stages, and they just look, I mean, painterly, because they are. And the period piece clothing is extremely impressive.
Yes. It's one I shockingly have not seen yet. I know.
Carrie, what?
I know. It's Lanthimos. I know.
Oh my God.
It's kind of crazy. It's a big, it's one I've got to see.
How could you resist Emma Stone with her long Crystal Gale hair?
I know. I've got it. It's, I should be watching it this week, but was not able to watch it in time for the show, but that's awesome. So my pick was the set design, particularly in Act Two of Beau Is Afraid.
Yes.
And so we were going to record last week, and then I said I was going to watch Beau Is Afraid, and you said, oh, let's wait. You need to watch that first, and you're absolutely right. So I thought that middle section, As you said, you were absolutely right. It's three different films, really. It's an hour a piece. Each act is an hour. Each act feels like a different film. That middle part, which is almost the relief from the absolute madness that takes place in Act One and Three, is gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful. It tells this kind of winding story. It's these this traveling band of performers that find, I guess, places all over, random wooded locations to build sets. And the sets are just gorgeous.
Yeah, they fanciful. Blew me
away. Yeah, you felt like you were kind of transported to an entirely different world for this middle hour of the film.
Well, and you kind of are.
You are, yeah. And it was fantastic. So it's Alain Cloutrat, Miriam Bellinger. These are the set decorators.
I read Fiona Crombie.
Yeah, there's a lot of names to go around. I will probably not get all of them. Correct, but yeah, I mean, it was just wonderful. Fiona Crombie, the production designer, kind of over it all, was great. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it too. And Beau Is Afraid was my runner-up.
Nice. All right, so what about best score?
You kick this one off.
Okay. So I really, well, I love this movie, and I thought the score was really great. Again, it's really, it's really spare. It's like a lot of horror scores, but it is so effective along with the film, which starts and never really stops. And that's Pablo Feu, When Evil Lurks.
Oh, nice.
And that movie, just in general, I just thought the world of it. I really like Damien Rugna, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I thought Terrified was a really good film that came out a few years back, but gosh, maybe now we're going back 4 or 5 years. And When Evil Lurks builds on the concept even better, even scarier, even gorier, and even, yeah, it's just a great film. So the score really added a lot to me.
Agree, and I'm so happy that we got to watch that together as well.
Yes,
Carrie
yes.
and I have not gotten to see a lot of horror movies together, so getting to see When Evil Lurks and Beau Is Afraid, both excellent.
Excellent movies. That was a treat. Yeah, our schedules are crazy, so it's very hard to get us together in one place. So yeah, so there we go. What about you?
Well, I decided to roll best sound into this category because I wanted a sure spot for Kyle Edward Ball's polarizing debut, Skinamarink. It is some muddy, unsettling audio, and it's the sort of thing where the silence is actually really loud and oppressive static. I think Skinamarink is awesome. I actually really loved it. I also understand the criticisms. Jason was not amused. But I think it's also a movie that only works if you let your imagination get lost in the grain and the noise of it. Did you end up watching Skinamarink?
I didn't.
I'd be interested to see what you thought. It really took me back to being a kid and being terrified of the dark.
Yeah, which is everyone can identify with that. That's awesome. All
All right.
right. So, best visual and special effects. We usually kind of, combine this as well into a main category, but what were your,
Carrie, I'm sorry. Can I go back and tell you a runner-up for best
Yeah,
score?
please do it.
So this isn't really best score. It's just best songs where I was happy to hear them, and it's in Beau Is Afraid. You hear Bread and Mariah Carey.
That's
It's
right.
so good. All right, that's all I had.
No, you're absolutely right.
For visual effects, I went with When Evil Lurks. I found many moments shocking, and a lot of it was down to the visual gnarliness. Unborn demon child trapped in a truly disgusting, bloated, quote unquote, rotten. There's a possessed goat that freaked me out. He makes Black Phillip look friendly. I was drop dead scared at five or six parts.
Yes. I also have Pablo Stambulian for visual effects and Marcus Berta for special effects for When Evil Lurks. You see the rotten, the first thing in the film, the first creature in the film is this rot that you first see, and it leaves a mark on you from the start.
Oh,
The
yeah.
effects are so, oh man, it is one of the grossest things I've seen in cinema in a while. And yes, and it's full of different creatures throughout. People getting infected and goats, animals and people and all that. And it's just, wow, it's great. It's really, it reminds you as good. And I mean, honestly, I could have put two other films right in there with it. They were right in the mix of it as well.
Ooh, what else do you have?
Infinity Pool, which I know would be right there, and Evil Dead Rise was fantastic. The effects in those visual effects and special effects were both amazing. When Evil Lurks just edged them out for me.
Infinity Pool was my runner-up for
Oh
sure.
yeah. Oh yeah.
All right. Cinematography. I had Poor Things. It's a lot of virtual screens, which doesn't sound super cool. But the way, I think it's the same cinematographer that Lanthimos has used on at least his last couple movies. I don't know his name, but he brings in the saturated orangey vintage look, which really creates a surreal world. It's also the first time in a while that I've seen fisheye used, and it was perfect.
Yes. Okay, yeah, I've got David Garbett for Evil Dead Rise,
Yes.
which you know, he definitely, the huge influence of Sam Raimi. How could it not be? You're doing an Evil Dead film. Sam Raimi is still the shepherd of that franchise, of that property. He does a great job with bringing in great directors to, whether it's Fede Alvarez in the remake, the 2010 remake, or, you know, whether it's the current one. But yeah, you know, you got the scene through the peephole. You've got all the Ellie scenes, the all the blood going out. The way he films all of that, it's and makes this small apartment in this, you know, large building seem much larger than it actually is. And that's, I think, just the...
I think it's the bloodiest
great
movie.
Great effects. The great effect of the cinematography, of the camera work, of the movement. The camera snakes around so much during the film. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Me too.
And he also did Ash vs. Evil Dead as well.
Really?
He was a cinematographer on that. So he's now an Evil Dead cinematographer.
That franchise is so solid. I'm sure it's we've talked about it. There's it is not a bad entry.
No, there's not. And you can't say that about almost any other horror franchise I could think of.
All right. What do you have for best screenplay?
Best screenplay. Okay, this is kind of a funny one. I really liked No One Will Save You a lot.
I haven't seen it.
There are maybe 10 lines in the entire film, and they're all incredibly effective, so it's a weird weird choice for screenplay. But I thought it was really, really cool how they, again, there's only a handful of moments, and they're all incredibly meaningful when they hit. My very close follow-up would be, or runner-up would be, Beau Is Afraid.
Beau Is Afraid is also my runner-up, because that is just a 3-hour horrifying odyssey.
Yes.
But for best screenplay, this is one where we're again shoehorning in a bunch of not exactly horror movies, because I am putting Godzilla Minus One in here. I haven't even seen that many Godzilla movies. I've kind of just seen the classics and the Smog Monster.
Yes.
But one thing I've noticed is that Godzilla can play out in a lot of different directions. It's totally different from Shin Godzilla, which I also really liked. And, you know, Smog Monster, Ghidorah, that one's super campy. This one is like a top-notch blockbuster. It's like Jurassic Park level. And it's also very emotional, as Carrie and I discussed.
Yes, yes. No, I totally agree with that. All right. What is our next category?
It is Best Supporting Actress. We are flying through.
I know. Okay, so let's see here. You want to go Best Supporting Actress?
Oh, Best Supporting Actress. Yes. I did Sylvina Salvatore as Myrta in When Evil Lurks. Mm. She's such a rad character. The only one with common sense.
That's very true.
The main character, Pedro, is losing his mind on everyone all the time. And Myrta is a former demon killer. She's cool-headed. She's brave. She's clearly had some hot affairs in her past. I was totally into her.
So I know Infinity Pool came out right near the end of the year, but I still considered it for our horror Oscars this year.
Totally.
Mia Goth, and I think maybe I'm just a Mia Goth fanboy.
Oh my God. It's
very possible that I am. I gave Pearl my favorite horror performance last year for 22. But yeah, I think just everything she does, she's great. She has an incredible presence on camera, and she's real out of control in Infinity Pool. She's just absolutely out there, and I was just riveted the whole time.
She's kind of like a hot horror unhinged cage moment type of thing.
Yes.
There's always a moment.
Yes, yes. No, she is awesome.
I actually counted her as a lead actress, and I'll just say now she was my runner-up for there. I didn't know, but I guess it is a best supporting actress.
You could argue both. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think that's right or wrong.
All right.
Okay, what about Best Supporting Actor?
Okay. I'm just going to say my runner-runner-up is Nathan Lane in Beau Is Afraid.
Yep.
Every second he's on the screen is a treat.
He's great. He's great.
But I think I'm going to go with Ezequiel Rodriguez, who's Pedro in When Evil Lurks. Mm. He's the desperate father that drives anyone watching this movie insane because he does everything wrong and to everyone's detriment. But, I mean, he has that poisonous temper, but he's very convincing. The dumbass choices his character makes is kind of what keeps the movie rolling. And I was like, I was worked up and pissed off at this idiot. So it was a really good job.
That is a good job. No, it's shocking how many poor decisions he makes. He was great. I chose Joe Bird. He was the younger brother of the lead actress in Talk to Me.
Oh my God.
And I thought he was fantastic. He takes the most punishment in that movie too. Good God. Like he has a bad time in Talk to Me. He goes through literal hell.
I was talking about this with Andrew Shearer, and if you have issues with eyeballs and things happening to eyeballs, this movie will upset you.
Don't watch it. But no, the kid's only 17.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I thought he had great presence as an actor. He committed to the role. I mean, he was in it. You believed everything that was happening to him. So yeah, I was pretty impressed. I mean, there's Nathan Lane is, I mean, how could I not put him on there? He's an easy runner up. I mean, he's an Academy Award winning actor. He's brilliant in everything he does. But I really like this kid. I thought he was great. I'll be interested to see what he does as a follow-up to Talk to Me. Maybe if he's, you know, in the second one or whatever he does. But yeah, I was really impressed.
I was impressed as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're already at Best Actress.
Best Actress. This is always a tough one because, you know, horror is, at the end of the day, I say for the most part, is a female-driven genre. It's especially with leads. Female leads rule horror.
And it just gets better and better mm-hmm. as the years go on.
Well, we get great actresses continue to cross over into horror films, even if they didn't start there. And so I thought Caitlin Dever in No One Will Save You, Brian Duffield,
okay.
Spontaneous.
I've got to see it.
Same guy who directed the No One Will Save You. She's the best actress. She's also the one, I mean, she has very few lines in the film. It's a lot of emotion. It's a lot of facial expressions. It's a lot of physical acting. And she just kills it. She knocks it out of the park. I thought she was great in it. I was really, really, really impressed. Seen her in a couple of things here and there. But to be able to do that with very little dialogue and carry a film, which she absolutely carries the film. I mean, 95% of the movie, she is on screen. She's fantastic.
Cool. I'm in. Would you say it kind of has the same feel as The Babysitter? Because after you told me that, it totally made sense for Spontaneous.
It's totally different.
Okay.
It's completely different. That's why I love it. That's why I think it's great.
Wow.
Because he's done a couple very, very different films. This is a total departure, I felt like, from any Babysitter-esque film at all.
Well, I'm intrigued. I'm going to watch it. This might be where I'm mixing my years up, so feel free to call me out.
Okay.
But I put M. Thregan, Megan, by Amy Donald, and Jenna Davis is the voice.
No, you're right. It came out right at the beginning of 23. Yeah.
And I did not realize that screenplay is by Ekla Cooper, which is a name I didn't know, but I saw that it's the same person who wrote the screenplay for Malignant.
Ooh.
Which I loved so much.
Which you really, really loved, yes.
I'm pleased to hear there's going to be a sequel to Megan. It's going to be Megan 2.0.
Sure, sure.
And my only complaint is they don't have enough wackiness with Megan. There's this one dance sequence that I just wish stretched on into like a full number.
Yeah, I agree. They really could have mined some more territory with that. I couldn't agree more.
Do you have a runner up?
Runner up. Okay. You tell me yours.
It's Mia Goth in Infinity Pool, though I do think probably more of a supporting actress. She is our favorite Psycho Smoke Show, and
yes.
She looks extra cuckoo in this because she has those bleached eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
When I was watching it the second time, I'm like, what is freaking me out about her beautiful face? And I think that's what it is. And she really does go through this transformation because she's this cloying, ditzy fangirl.
Yes.
At first.
Yes.
Until she unleashes.
Yeah, no, she's amazing. Everything she does. Like I said, fanboy number one right here. Okay, so another one that I, another actress that I thought was really, really great, was in, was Talk to Me. It was Sophia Wilde.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And she did a really good job of, you know, she was sort of the mouthpiece for the trauma, family trauma someone deals with, trying to be accepted by a group of people who you kind of feel like you're on the outside with. I thought she did a great job of pulling all that off and Talk to Me.
I did not love Talk to Me. I think it's objectively a really good movie, but it just wasn't for me. But I wish I'd considered things like that more because every component of the movie is really solid. The performances are great, the story's a good ghost story, the effects are scary.
They are. They're really effective. You know, we've talked about this before. I don't always love as much some of a lot of the teen horror that you love. There's some I really do. This one really got me though. I really thought it was great.
Well, this is a much more artistic teen
True,
horror.
true. Yeah. This is not Truth or Dare.
We probably should have done Best Actor first now that I'm looking at it, but I'm ready to go into Best Actor. Best Actress was my highlight.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It kind of always is.
Yeah. Do you want to kick this one?
Sure. So this is kind of a funny one. I just thought this. Okay, so Five Nights at Freddy's was probably one of my least favorite horror films of the year, if not the absolute least favorite. However, I really thought Josh Hutcherson did a good job in it. He's a really unlikable dad. And Josh Hutcherson has kind of made his career off being like the kind of the nice guy, PETA, you know, in the Hunger Games and all that. You know,
Oh.
and in this one, he's kind of a deadbeat dad, not super likable.
I can't believe he's of the age that he's playing
I
dads.
know, I know. Young dad though, I get it. Like he's a young dad, doesn't really know kind of, you know, what he's doing. He's still kind of finding his way. But yeah, I actually thought he was really good in it. And again, best actors in horror, there aren't a whole lot of them. It's not a deep category in the horror genre. So I thought he did a pretty good job. Again, I really did not like his character a whole lot, and I mean he has some redemption towards the end of the movie, but yeah, I thought Hutcherson was really good.
Interesting. I might still watch it. Sometimes I just need to watch something stupid that I don't have to pay attention to.
It's a good one for that.
Well, I went with, and I'm going to mispronounce the name, Barry Keoghan?
Keegan.
Keegan.
Oh.
In Saltburn. Did you watch Saltburn in the end?
I did, and I've struggled to decide whether I think it's to put on here as a true horror film, but it kind of
Me
is.
too, it's a fucking slasher. Spoiler.
I know I've gone back and forth on that. He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. I mean, had I committed to making that a horror film on this list, which I probably should have, he would have won by landslide.
Oh my god. He is the master of that lazy sociopathic gaze.
He was amazing in Banshees of Inisherin as well last year.
Killing of a sacred deer.
Killing of a Sacred Deer. The guy's just like
He
boom,
rules.
boom, boom. There's no everything he does, he commits 1,000% to it. And he does have that. I'd be curious to meet this guy in real life. I'd love to just sit down and have a beer with Barry Keoghan. I want to know like
Bet he's
who is
cool
this
as
dude? He probably
hell.
is. He probably gets the weirdness out on camera. But man, he's great.
But on the screen, he is terrifying.
Yes,
I cannot
yes.
unsee the things that happen in Saltburn. I feel
Oh,
like.
the part, the bench scene?
Okay, so Carrie thinks. We're just gonna go
The
spoilers
bench
here. You
scene.
y'all should have seen Saltburn by now.
Oh.
So he's going down on a girl while she's having her period, but I did not think that was the worst. I thought the worst was. I didn't know what to expect with this movie. No one I'd known had seen it yet.
No.
And he
I went in blind.
slurps up this jizzed in bathwater.
Yeah, he does.
I
Yeah, he
almost
does.
threw up. I
Yep.
couldn't believe what I was watching. And then I was like, this guy is going for anything.
And well, Emerald Fennell, like, as far as writing the character, she just swings for the fences with that movie. She is like, we're going all the way out there.
And to find an actor that's along for that ride.
Yeah. Who pulls it off with aplomb. Yeah.
Runner up, Joaquin Phoenix.
Yep. I mean, he's on, sure. He's on, yeah. I mean, he's great. He's always great.
And We're really getting to it. Best director. Who do you have?
I actually chose Brian Duffield of The Babysitter.
God, I've got to see it.
Babysitter 2 and No One Will Save You. Again, he directs this film. It feels a little bit 10 Cloverfield Lane-ish to me. Larger plot going on outside of a claustrophobic setting, you know? But it's its own film. It's not... they're very different films, I think, in a lot of ways. So, but so good, working with so little, as far as there's not a whole lot of effects in it. A lot of the effects are in shadows. If you can make a film that compelling for an hour and a half where I'm just on the edge of my seat, again, very little dialogue, mostly in one location, I just thought it was great.
Okay, this is a very strong recommendation.
I really do. Now, you may, again, there's not a lot of gore in it. It's probably a PG-13, I think, film. But I just really, really liked everything about it. I don't know. I was really taken by it. I was.
I'm never put off by the PG-13.
I know, right? I often am, and I really like this one.
Well, I went with Ari Aster for Beau is Afraid. Mm. He's just the director I'm most excited about. Everything is a fucked up family. I thought there might be some trauma in this that would be upsetting to me, but it turns out this is a wholly different, insane mom trauma.
Yes, yes.
And when you look at the movie, I think you described it best when you're just like, this is self-indulgent. And it really is. It's a self-indulgent, like, sprawling shit show. But I can't take my eyes away. Mm. I've watched it 2.5 times now. And I just think Ari Aster can't go wrong for me. I think there are a lot of fake freaks out there, and I think he's the real deal.
He is. I struggled with the runner-up. I struggled with all three. There were three in my mind that were right there. It was him, Beau is Afraid. It was Duffield with No One Will Save You. My runner up would be Damon Rugna When Evil Lurks.
That would probably be my runner up too.
It's an incredibly well paced film. Again, as I mentioned earlier, it starts and doesn't really let up until the end. You get some moments to breathe, but it just all moves so well. It's so well put together. I thought even better than Terrified was, not to be confused with Terrifier, by the way. But yeah, so I thought he was great. But again, it's almost splitting hairs when you talk about some of these directors. I mean, Ari Aster could every year be my favorite director on anything for any movie he does. I mean, I'm pretty sure Midsommar, I believe when Midsommar came out, that he was my director of choice that year, but I'd have to go back and look.
Carrie, I can't remember. Did you watch his short, The Strange Thing About the Johnsons?
I haven't.
Jason and I had a date night, and if you want anything that kills the mood,
that's the one. All right.
I think they're all still on YouTube, his shorts. And
okay.
That was definitely the one that stuck with me the most, but they're pretty good. You know, I want to change my runner-up because we just don't have enough women on this list, and I want to throw Emerald Fennell in there. I thought she was killer.
And that's what's so weird. Like, if I had chosen Saltburn to be on this list, if I'd put it into my computation, it would be all over this list too. So that's the weird thing about the horror genre these days. There's some movies that are horror adjacent that you could throw in there. Godzilla Minus One almost would have been there, but I didn't put it in there. But yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think Godzilla Minus One was more of a stretch. I think Saltburn is straight up horror.
It's a creepy, creepy film.
It's funny sometimes too.
It is. No, it's shockingly funny at times.
Rosamund Pike got me every time. She's hilarious.
Oh yeah, she's a nut job in that movie. She's great. she's There's a, if you don't mind strangeness, if you don't mind just a film taking you for a ride, it's very much like another film that I won't name, but I mean that, yeah, just go with it. Just walk into it and go with it.
Mm-hmm.
It may be too much for some people, and I completely get that, but yeah.
It was too much for me, but I still loved it.
Right? Beau's Afraid could fall under that category as well.
Beau's Afraid is a nonstop anxiety attack.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
All right. Best picture. Let's do our runner-ups.
Okay.
Okay. My runner-up is Infinity Pool. I thought this was going to be my best picture. It's a luxury resort nightmare. The first reveal of the actual like pool and the body double setup. It's so awesome. It's tense and wild. And like we said, we both love Mia Goth. But it kind of ends up being more about these psycho rich vacationers and makes you hate rich people more.
Sure, sure. Yeah. There was a lot of that in 23. A lot of Eat the Rich films, for sure. I've been going back and forth about this. This is a tough one.
It wasn't for me. Well, what's your runner-up, though?
Even now, I'm sitting here looking at these two, and I'm not sure. Okay, I'm gonna put Talk to Me as my runner-up, actually. I'm going to put Talk to Me as my runner-up.
That is a fine runner-up. I think it's a lot of people's best movie of the year.
It's Danny best and Michael. Horror. I'm going to get your name, last name wrong, and my apologies. Filippo. They're Australian brothers. They rose to fame with the Raka Raka YouTube series, which I haven't really watched a whole lot of, but was incredibly popular. And now they jointly directed one of my favorite horror films of the year, Talk to Me, and they created a horror franchise, really, because this thing is going to have legs. Like, we're going to have multiple Talk to Me's. I don't think we're just going to have one sequel to it either.
Keep talking to me
because the plot's built for that, like, very smartly created to just kind of, you could have endless characters weave in and out of the horror of Talk to Me, of the, you know. So
what a banger for a debut film.
Yeah. So that's my runner-up. So, all right.
Best picture time.
All right.
I wonder if we picked the same one. I went with When Evil Lurks.
Yep, same here.
Because I thought Infinity Pool was the best horror movie pretty much straight through the year. And then Carrie and I watched When Evil Lurks just last month.
Yep. Only a few weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, it was scary. I was frustrated. I was scared. I was tense the whole time. The terror is just ramped up nonstop. And it's cool to see a possession movie where no one is into contacting a priest or any Catholic, really.
Well, there's a lot of, they don't believe in any of the systems of government around them. They don't trust any of it. So you've got to imagine that when you think about some of the, you know, where, I don't know where Damon Rugin is from, but when you think about some of these rural settings with very corrupt small governments, where the people don't feel like they have any kind of say, there's some social context to it that I'm probably not, we're probably not catching all of in When Evil Lurks, but it's right there, because no one trusts anybody.
Yes.
And maybe that's part of the sign of the times. Maybe that's part of a post-COVID world where there's a lot of mistrust. There was a lot of mistrust from those years, and now we're kind of getting it back, but we have a very fractured world in general. I feel like When Evil Lurks, that's a lot of what he's talking about with the horror in it.
I can see that. That makes a lot of sense. I think I read an interview, someone fact checked me on this too, but I think it was him, where he talks about reading articles on Argentinian farming that was poisoning the workers.
There you go. Okay. You're right. Right. I mean, that's right on. And actually, when I was talking with Montu Miller, who is probably one of the biggest horror fans I know, I saw it. Montu kept telling me, you gotta see it. I was gonna see it regardless. But Montu was like, it's my top of the year. And I was like, okay, fine. And I watched it. I was like, I can't argue with that, buddy.
I am so out of the loop. I'd never even heard of it before Carrie, and thank God we watched it together.
Yes.
There's kind of nothing in that movie that's not gross. One thing that stuck with me that is not even horror, what is apple ice cream?
It's a thing.
What?
It's a thing. Not here as much. You go a little further south, it is absolutely a thing.
Whoa. I could only think frozen applesauce. And then after the scene at the end where you see a lot of ice cream come back up with hair. I'm definitely not eating apple ice cream now.
Damien, you ruined it. You ruined it for us. No. You know, some of the movies that didn't quite make it for me, but were a lot of fun. I mentioned maybe a couple that weren't on my awards list. I thought Thanksgiving was a blast.
I have to see Thanksgiving.
Eli Roth, returning to form.
I love Eli Roth.
It's very much My Bloody Valentine. I mean, it feels almost like he took My Bloody Valentine, just changed it into Thanksgiving. But he adds a lot. There's a lot he adds to it. I really enjoyed it. It didn't make, again, an award for me, but I thought it was really fun. Any that didn't make the awards for you, but that you enjoyed, that you liked, that were just right on the edge?
I'm going to steal from your list because I'm drawing a blank, but I also really enjoyed Cocaine Bear.
I mean,
if you're someone that loves practical effects, Cocaine Bear may not be for you.
Correct.
But I thought it was so fun and funny. I had a good time watching it.
It was. It really was. And Elizabeth Banks, mm-hmm. doing her thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, for Charlie's Angels, it was a great one. This was a hit. Cocaine Bear was an absolute, absolute home run. So, yeah.
I love the scene where it's the ranger up in the tree, like, losing all of his limbs.
Yeah. The old Western standoff where he's on the roof and he's got the guys, he's got them pinned down and everyone's trying to figure out what the heck to do.
God,
and that scene,
awesome.
Oh my God, it's great. It's a great, it's a really well done scene. Really great, you know, black humor in that too. So yeah.
I'm going to say 2023 was an excellent year for horror. I can't think of a movie I saw that I thought was bad.
Even the one or two that I didn't really love, there were a couple I didn't love. Still fun, still enjoyable, mm-hmm. still had something to, you know, still had something unique about them. So, yeah.
Well, it's the end of February as we're recording this.
Yes.
And we had meant to talk to Andrew Shearer about Black History Month and more black horror movies, but we're just going to have to do that in March.
That's right. I think we'll do that though. We've got a few things, you know. Steph and I've been we've been in the meeting room, in the boiler room. We've been talking about some things, some ideas for episodes. So this will not be the last one of the year, I'm pretty sure.
I am 60% sure this will not be the last episode.
Certainly, we can find the time to do at least a couple more, but we're hoping we can. So whoever's left out there that actually still listens to our episodes when we drop them.
Oh, thank you.
You're right, thanks. And we'll be coming back with another one, TBA.
TBA, hopefully soon. I'm going to say March so we do it, but if
like
nothing
that.
Happens in March, I'm going to feel foolish.
I like that. I like that. It's all right. They don't believe us anyway, and that's okay. It's well earned. All right, well, thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.